Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
Now we are representing Africa, and for us to go there to be voted at the UN Security Council came from an African Union vote that took place in Addis Ababa. So that tells you we're going to serve the whole continent at the UN Security Council, and this will actually boost the relationship that we have with other African states. Since we are representing Africa, we are there for the African continent.
Somalia's information minister expresses excitement over the country's election to the 15-member UN Security Council.
When it comes to the economy, especially the last year and a half, Kenyans for the first time have had a real impact in their lives based on the budget. Many Kenyans have seen their income dwindled. They've also seen the cost of living increase many times over.
Most Kenyans think the country is heading in the wrong direction.
I think she's a very good choice for a ministry such as justice. But a lot more needs to be done. We've only got 4 female ministers out of the 25 in cabinet. And really, that is not representative at all. I believe that there are a lot of women out there that are capable.
And Zambian President Hakainde Hichilema names a prominent activist as the country's first female justice minister. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Somalia's information minister is expressing excitement over the country's election to the 15-member UN Security Council for a 2-year term beginning in 2025. Daoud Awey says the election to the world body presents Somalia with a major platform to represent the East African country's interests and that of the entire African continent. The election of Somalia comes as it faces economic and security challenges, as well as its recent diplomatic spat with Ethiopia. For more reaction, I reached Somalia's information minister, Daoud Awey.
This is a momentous of joy. It's a momentous that Somalia is regaining its position in the international or in the global stage. And Somalia's presence on the UN Security Council will provide the country with a platform and to represent its interests and also contribute to discussions on international peace and security. This also allows us to have a voice in shaping decisions that affect not only our own nation, but also the broader global community. Also, as a member of the UN Security Council, we will have the opportunity to influence the Council's agenda and also decisions on various international issues, including conflicts and humanitarian crisis and peacekeeping operations, and also raise awareness of Somalia's specific challenges and the needs on the international stage.
What does this election mean to Somalia and its people?
This means a big victory because for the last time Somalia to be a member in the non-permanent seat of the UN Security Council was in 1972-1973. So it's more than 50 years, and after going through chaos and conflict for a long time or decades, Somalia now is getting its position in the international stage, and also serving in this UN Security Council and will require us engaging in diplomatic negotiations and decision-making process with other member states. And this will offer Somalia the chance to build relationships with other countries, promote dialogue, and work towards peaceful resolutions to conflicts in the region and beyond.
What is the major takeaway for the government in Mogadishu on this?
On this shows that we have now not only responsibility or tasks that we have been always busy internally, but we also now exposed to be part of the international or the global stage to play our role that will also be helpful to Somalia, and also the world can learn from our experiences for the 3 decades that we went through challenge.
What is the message to the world after this election?
The message to the world of Somalia to the world is that we are now back in the international stage. We are here to contribute positively for the main challenge that the world is now facing.
But do you see this as having any positive impact on relations between Somalia and your neighboring countries, including even Ethiopia, who you have recently disagreed with?
I think definitely this is, now we are representing Africa, and for us to go there to be voted at the UN Security Council came from a united an African Union vote that took place in Addis Ababa. So that tells you we are going to serve the whole continent at the UN Security Council, and this will actually boost the relationship that we have with other African states. Since we are representing Africa, we are there for the African continent.
Daoud Awais is Somalia's information minister. He spoke with me from the capital, Mogadishu. In Kenya, about 63% of the population think the country is heading in the wrong direction. 87% of respondents say they are opposed to the introduction of 16% value-added tax, or VAT, on bread, while 86% say they are against the introduction of a tax on financial transactions such as M-Pesa. The findings were contained in a new market survey conducted by Infotrack research firm. The findings also show that 8 out of 10 Kenyans are opposed to the introduction of new taxes on financial services, bread, cooking oil, and cars. For more reaction to the research, I reach Mark Bichachi. He is communication and political strategist of Dia Consult.
Last year, Kenyans similarly had complaints about the finance bill that had been proposed, which not only increased taxes but also introduced new taxes such as the housing fund tax. It added 8% tax on fuel and many other costs and taxes that actually reduced the gross income of many Kenyans. And since then, many businesses have closed. Many people are suffering because even those who are employed, their salaries took quite a shave in terms of how much money they're able to take home. Now, this bill for this year is a follow-up to that particular bill. Kenyans do not feel like the economy is doing well. Kenyans are saying that they are unable to make ends meet. Many of them have lost their jobs and lost their businesses. And these new taxes that are being proposed both on motor vehicles, on the use of internet, and the tax on the gross income of online companies have brought not only fears among the people, but also we know that companies such as Uber and Bolt are saying that if these taxes are implemented, they'll pull out of the market.
But Mark, the question some people are also asking is, the government has to raise revenue in order to improve infrastructure and improve the living conditions of people, conditions of service, and all that. If the government is unable to raise revenue, the country is sure to suffer a lot of consequences, including dilapidated infrastructure that the country's economy heavily depends upon.
That may seem to be logical in the sense that every government is expected to raise revenue in order to be able to meet the needs of the country. But let us remember that this is a country where there is a history. It is just hardly 4 years ago when we survived as a country the COVID pandemic, where taxes were reduced and the government was still able to meet all of those needs. And then you must also compare that statement with the apparent largesse that is being seen by Kenyans, that is quite clear in terms of the kind of shoes and watches and things that some government leaders are now buying. And then, of course, the expenditure in terms of the increased expenditure, even in State House itself. So many Kenyans are arguing that, no, these taxes, one, are not becoming effective in the sense that they're actually reducing the same economy that they expect to tax from. And two, Kenyans are saying that many of these resources are going into people's pockets.
What do you say to the research that also shows that about 63% of Kenyans believe the country is headed in the wrong direction?
When it comes to the economy, especially the last year and a half, is Kenyans for the first time have had a real impact in their lives based on the budget. So Many Kenyans have seen their incomes dwindle, both as businesses and as individuals who are salaried. They've also seen the cost of living increase many times over, not just driven by market forces, but driven by the fact that there was increased taxes on such commodities as fuel. And now when they're looking at it and seeing that things like bread are going to start being taxed again, then it is becomes very difficult for the average Kenyan to say that the country is going in the right direction, given that for once this country and the political discussion in this country is surrounding the economy and surrounding budget and what the government is doing. So there is a lot of talk and discussion among the Kenyan people, discussing and even talking to experts to see whether it is feasible for the country to continue as is. It's not just 63% of Kenyans who are complaining about the cost of living. It is also the World Bank, which has just released a statement to the government saying that the new proposed tax measures are, one, creating an unpredictable environment, which is true because many Kenyans now cannot predict how their businesses will be. You cannot predict how the tax regime will be because it's changing every other day. But two, that it is stifling so many businesses.
Mark Bichachi is Communication and Political Strategies of Dire Consult. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Betty Kamya, Inspector General of Government in Uganda, says corruption is at the top of the list of the challenges facing the country. The head of the anti-corruption agency also says she welcomes President Yoweri Museveni's recommitment to the fight against graft, fraud and mismanagement. Her remarks come after the president declared war on corrupt public officials at a recent ceremony. Kamya says the president's statement will help boost the fight against financial malfeasance and wrongdoing. For more on the status of the fight against graft and reaction to President Museveni's renewed call for war on wrongdoing, I reach Betty Kamya.
Well, I welcome it. Definitely anything that adds ammunition to the war against corruption in Uganda is welcome. And so, yes, I do welcome the president's renewed commitment to fight the war against corruption. And I think that it will help us all to renew our commitment and our war.
Some people are suggesting that perhaps the recent sanctions imposed by the United Kingdom and subsequently by the U.S. on the Speaker of the National Assembly or the Parliament is bringing a spotlight in the fight against corruption in Uganda. What is your reaction to that?
It would definitely be a good thing, but it is not seen as an independent or objective move. It is mixed up with their war for homosexuality. It's all mixed up. And Ugandans are mixed up, so to say, because on the one hand, we followed a debate in the British Parliament about homosexuality. And so the problem with the sanctions by the US and the UK is that they are not seen as objective in Uganda. They are seen as part of their campaign for homosexuality. So it's unfortunate that the two are so are seen to be moving together. Otherwise, like I said, any support, verbal, material, moral, emotional, or otherwise, to the war against corruption is welcome.
Even if the support is coming from international partners?
Yeah, of course. We are part of a global movement against homosexuality. I mean, against, you see how they're mixed up, against corruption. We are members of the United Nations Conventions Against Corruption. We have signed it and ratified it. We are members of all regional and the global movement protocols and other movements against corruption. So Uganda is moving with the rest of the world. We have ratified, we have signed, we have sponsored, we have promoted, we have agreed with any campaign or brick that is put on the wall against corruption.
What would you say is the current state of affairs in the fight against corruption? Because some people are saying that although efforts are being carried out by your institution to weed out corruption, it appears to be too weak and ineffective. Your response to that?
I will tell you that corruption in Uganda has reached levels which can attract many descriptions. Pandemic is one of them. That is true. It's been growing. And so, yes, I would say that it's really a national problem. It has taken on bigger proportions than it was before. About 20, 30 years ago, maybe it was not top of the list of problems of Uganda. Today, corruption could easily be top of the list. And as the president said, it is top of the list, top on the list of Uganda's problems, which wasn't the case a couple of decades ago. But yes, it's very serious, but we also want to, and the strategy that we are taking now is to make it everybody's war, every Ugandan's war. People must relate to the war as personal. The reason I am not getting the services I deserve, the reason the health services are not as good as they should be, is because of corruption. People must personalize it, and that's the strategy that we are taking. And I think it's working fairly well.
Betty Kamia is Inspector General of Government, an anti-graft institution. She spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. The national spokesperson for South Africa's Democratic Alliance, or DA, says the opposition party had a very good outcome of the recently ended elections. Moba Solomon, or Soli Malachi, also says the DA is part of the ongoing talks with the African National Congress, or ANC, and other political parties aimed at forming the next coalition government. The DA maintained its position as the second largest opposition party in South Africa after garnering 21.8% in the May 29 national elections. Soli Malachi tells me that the Democratic Alliance figures were a marginal increase in growth from its previous performance.
The DA had a very good election this year. We have grown from 20.8% to just over 21.87%. That means that we have increased our seat in national parliament by 3 seats from 84 to 87 compared to 2019. Additionally, we have grown across 6 provinces, wherein we have gained in total 7 seats compared to 2019, which means we've got far more members of parliament and far more members of provincial legislatures in this election than in the previous election. But what we've also seen through the performance that we had, resulting in over 3.5 million South Africans voting for the DA, is that, one, we have won back some of the support that we lost in 2019. We have been able to retain the majority of our Muslim votes. We have also grown amongst the black voters, mostly in townships and amongst the middle class.
Is the DA part of ongoing talks to form a coalition government?
Well, the DA is currently part of the ongoing discussions to explore the prospect of forming a government. And we are in conversation with the ANC and other parties to see if there are compatible areas in which we could potentially work together.
The South African Communist Party is against the ANC having discussions with the DA, even threatening to embark on a nationwide campaign against this act or this action or dialogue?
Well, the ANC and its partners can have their views. We are embarking on a process of engaging the ANC. The SACP was not in the election, but we know for obvious fact that it is a partner of the ANC. But our discussions are limited to that for now.
What do you think are the prospects of the ongoing discussion between your party and the ANC, as well as your party and other opposition political parties?
Well, it's still very early days in the stage. By towards the end of this week and possibly over the weekend, we will have a sense of where the negotiations are leaning.
What has been the responses of supporters of the DA so far following its performance?
Well, the supporters, I would imagine, are equally satisfied with the performance of the party, given that we are one of three parties that have experienced growth in this election, which, as I said in the beginning, means more members of parliament, more members of the provincial legislature.
What is the major takeaway for your party following the elections?
Well, I think the most important thing is we need to see where the negotiations regarding the future of governance in our country go. And from there onwards, we'll be able to determine what our role in that would be as the Democratic Alliance. But the one thing that they can be assured of is that we are negotiating in good faith. We are committed to working with parties that share our commitment to the Constitution, and that we will play a positive role in helping our country navigate this very difficult unknown territory that we find ourselves in.
So for those who are suspicious or are not comfortable with what the DA stands for and what the ANC stands for, that these are diametrically opposing political parties with no meeting point, what do you tell them?
I think in fairness, Peter, is that the negotiations are at a very, very early stage. And of course, yes, it is public knowledge that on some very key issues, we stand on different sides of the issue. But in recognition of the need to embark on negotiations and out of respect of those, it is also common knowledge that during negotiations there is room for compromise and finding each other, and that we are giving our negotiations team the space, as we have through the mandate they have, to be able to get us to one, a potential decision that is compatible with where we stand. And if that doesn't work, that will be the outcome of that, and we'll be more than happy to continue our role as the official opposition.
Solly Malachi is national spokesperson for South Africa's Democratic Alliance, or DA. He spoke with me from Johannesburg, South Africa. In Zambia, the executive director of the Non-Governmental Gender Organizations Coordinating Council, or NGOCC, has praised the choice of Princess Kasune as Justice Minister. And Mbewe Anamela, who heads the Umbrella Network for Non-Governmental and Community-Based Groups, is also calling on the government to appoint more women to decision-making positions in public institutions. Her remarks come after a mini-cabinet reshuffle following President Hakainde Hichilema's recent press conference. The president, in a press statement, appointed Princess Kasune, a prominent activist, as the new justice minister. She takes over from Mulambo Haimbe, who now becomes the Zambian foreign minister. For more reaction about the appointment, I reach Anne Mbewe Anamela.
Oh, Peter, we're very happy with this appointment. At the moment, the women's representation in parliament as well as in cabinet is very low. Out of 25 positions in cabinet, we only have 3 female ministers. And with Princess Kasune now coming in, that will make it 4. So for us, the fact that we've added onto the numbers of women in cabinet is also a very good thing.
Some people are suggesting that President Hakainde Hichilema should be praised for picking somebody who has been a prominent activist and human rights defender in Zambia as the justice minister. However, they said he has to be encouraged to add more women. Is this your stance?
Indeed. I should confirm that Honorable Princess Kasune has been a very, very strong human rights advocate and also specifically a gender advocate. We've worked with her quite closely even when she was chairperson of the Women's Parliamentary Caucus. So she's somebody that is well known to the women's movement, and we know her passion on issues around gender equity and equality. So from that standpoint, I think she's a very good choice for a ministry such as justice. But a lot more needs to be done. I mean, as I said, we've only got 4 female ministers out of the 25 in cabinet. And really, that is not representative at all. I believe that there are a lot of women out there that are capable of taking up positions as cabinet minister and also other high positions of leadership. And because they're there, they should be considered, you know, and it's possible to also reach a 50-50 percent women and men ratio.
Why has Zambia struggled to attain this 50% parity? As I understand, Zambia is a signatory to that and is committed and is even in the law of Zambia. Why has it been difficult? Because this is not the first time. Previous administrations, I understand, have struggled with the same.
Well, first and foremost, I think one of the reasons when it comes to especially elected positions is that the electoral system that we have, the first past the post, does not favor any affirmative action, especially in a country where, you know, we haven't yet reached gender equality. And when you haven't reached gender equality, I think you need to have, you know, legal frameworks that will, you know, that will propel this to happen. Our constitution is clear on equal opportunities and, you know, equal participation. But I think there's still more that needs to be done. And this should start right at political party level. We've been seeing that nominations at political party level are still very skewed to men. And of course, underlying, you know, this type of behavior is the issue of patriarchy. We still have a lot of patriarchal tendencies in Zambia, right at community level, household level, and this seems to be, you know, permeating right up into our governance systems.
What do you say to critics who say activists like you are to blame for the government not being able to do that or name more female into top government positions like you like, because you've not been making the noise or you've not been as effective as they want you to be to pressure the administrations to include more women in high government positions or decision-making positions? What are your expectations of the new justice minister whom you know very well and worked with previously?
Well, firstly, we want to wish her well in her appointment. And from what we've known of her, we really believe that she will do very well in this position. I think she has the background, she has the confidence, and she also is a person that is very well, how do I put it, she's articulate and she understands issues and matters very broadly. So we really think that she will do well in this position and should be a very good role model to younger women and other women out there.
And Mbewe Anamela is the executive director of the Non-Governmental Gender Organizations Coordinating Council. She spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. And you are listening to Nightline Africa on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the Bishops' Council of Zambia is challenging the Inspector General of Police, Raphael Musamba, to address the nation about security concerns that prevent opposition groups from holding political activities. The call comes after critics and opposition groups accuse the police of using, quote, security concerns to stop opposition parties from holding rallies. They also say opposition groups have not been allowed to do so since 2021. This after the police stopped the New Heritage Party from holding a planned rally last week, citing security concerns. The police say, as a law enforcement agency, its actions are always aimed at maintaining law and order and at protecting life and property as mandated by the Constitution. Bishop Abel Kaela is the General Secretary of the Bishops' Council of Zambia. He tells me that the police chief must inform the public about the security concerns Zambia faces.
In fact, this is a cry from all quarters of this nation, because when we talk about the other group, they are given, you know, a leeway to speak to people, to do whatever they want. But when the opposition wants to take up a challenge to, you know, explain what they want to do and what they want in this nation, it's always a challenge. And if you remember, just 2 days or 3 days ago, the opposition was supposed to have had a rally. But unfortunately, some hooligans came with machetes and scattered everything. There was no meeting at all. So now we are asking, is this the democracy that we fought for? So we are asking as a church, what is happening? And that's why we said, no, the best thing is that the Inspector General of Police must come out in the open. If they are saying there should be no rallies from today up to what time, they should tell the people the truth, because the truth will set people free.
The question some Zambians are asking is, why aren't the opposition groups and civil society groups following the law? Because people have expressed concern that the opposition tend to hold rallies or attempt to hold rallies just to disturb public peace. And it's the public that usually complain to the police, which then, as a law enforcement agency, the police need to act.
But how do they know that when they hold the meeting, it is to disturb the peace? How do they know that? That's a question that you're asking. If they are saying that whenever the opposition wants to, hold a rally, it's to disturb the peace of the land. How do they know that? In fact, that's a question that you must also ask the Inspector of Police. How do they know that? Because what we know and why the opposition is there is to give checks and balances. If things are not okay like it is today, why should people keep quiet? People cannot keep quiet. So on that point, we are saying it's neither here nor there. That point cannot hold water at all.
Why are the bishops calling on the government to state their position on whether the opposition will not be allowed to have public rally until it was an election year or not? Because remember, a former head of state said that there's a time for electioneering, campaigning, and there's also a time for governance and people to work. So what is this call about?
That's why we say these people must come out in the open to tell everyone, because it's not everyone who knows that it's not a campaign time or it's a campaign time. Nobody knows. So the government or the police must come out in the open and tell everyone so that everyone knows. You know, that's why we talked about the truth, because the truth will set you free. When you speak out, everybody will know. They spoke about this thing because it is also in the Constitution that if it's not time to campaign, it's not time to campaign. If it's time to work, let's work. You should come out in the open. But why are they not coming out in the open? It's important they come out in the open. And everybody will abide by the rule. And you know, Zambia, we always abide by the rule of the law of the land.
Is the Bishops' Council of Zambia giving the Inspector General of Police a time frame within which to come out in the open to talk to Zambians about the security concerns, which you say enables the police to stop opposition rallies?
No. We cannot do that, because we know those people, they are trained people, and they understand when people start to complain. They understand that if there is a problem, and if there is a problem, what is the problem? They have heard from everybody what everybody is saying. So it's them now to make a decision. We cannot give them a 48-hour ultimatum or a 72-hour. No, we cannot do that. It's up to them now to come out in the open, because we have spoken that they should tell the whole nation that this is what the people want, to know whether this is campaign time or no campaign time. That's all that is there.
Bishop Abel Kaela is the General Secretary of the Bishops' Council of Zambia. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. Former Sierra Leonean Vice President Sam Sumana has returned to the main opposition All People's Congress, or APC. Sumana served as Vice President to President Ernest Bai Koroma, but following a disagreement with his former boss, he resigned from the APC and ran in the 2018 general election as a presidential candidate for his own party, the Coalition for Change, or C4C. Sumana's return appears to be exciting to his supporters, who say he should be allowed to contest as a presidential candidate for the APC in the next general election. Lazana Dumbuya is the Secretary General of the All People's Congress, or APC. He tells me that the former vice president returns to the party as a regular member in accordance to the party's constitution.
Sam Sumana left the party, you know, under some circumstances, and he's come back to the party. He formed his own party, contested against the party, but that is bygone now. A majority of the people say, okay, if you want to come back, we are ready to accept you, and which everybody wants him to come back to the party. But all they are saying, and I as the Secretary General, all I am saying is for him to come as dictated by the Constitution, you know, because the Constitution under Article 13 states clearly how someone who has been expelled or who has left the party for some reason, you know, is asked out of the party, how he should come back to the party. And Article 13 states that if you want to come back to the party, you have to be readmitted subject to Article 2 of the Constitution.
Did he meet the threshold of the Constitution of the APC?
To be readmitted, he meets the threshold to be readmitted to the party. But when you talk, for example, your question, which you initially posed, you know, was that you had that he's to be reinstated to the party. And that is the wrong word to use because our constitution, that word does not exist in our constitution. Subject to Article 2 of the Constitution. And Peter, what is Article 2 of the APC Constitution? Article 2 of the APC Constitution is for fresh membership into the party. How you come into the party fresh as a member and you follow the procedure, you know, you come, you know, to the Secretary General, how you do it, and, you know, so that you are accepted as a new member. So meaning that if you are to be readmitted once you've left the party or been expelled out of the party, if you are coming back to the party, you have to come in as a new member of the party. That is the implication, and that is what the Constitution dictates, and no one, you know, I cannot go out of the Constitution, neither should anyone.
Now, talking about new membership, as you have explained, some are even suggesting that as a prominent member of the party who served as the vice president of the country and the party leadership, why shouldn't he be able to contest as a presidential candidate? Because there have been talks from members of your own party that perhaps he should be eligible because of the height he attained before leaving the party.
Let's get down to the issue. And you have to understand, as someone who I believe, you know, appreciates the rationale behind rules and regulations and also the constitution, whether it's of a political party, an institution, or the country, everybody should adhere to the Constitution. It is not my making as the National Secretary General. It is not the chairman's making. It is not the grassroots or the ordinary members' making. But we all agreed collectively to change the 1995 Constitution, which was there. And it is that Constitution that states under Article 13 of the Constitution that once you have been asked out of the party or you have left the party of your own volition, if you are coming back, you have to come into the party subject to Article 2 of the Constitution. It specifically states subject to Article 2. And Article 2 of the Constitution is new membership into the party. Difficult as it may be, whatever explanation you have given just now, you will say to me that you would not allow the APC to breach its constitution.
So as it stands now, he is just an ordinary member of the APC and not qualified to hold any political position or vie for any political position, correct?
You see, the constitution states that for someone to vie, even for my position as a Secretary General, you must have been 5 years in the party, full paying member, consistently paying. And then you can vie for Secretary General, you can vie for chairman of the party, and also for even the flag bearer.
So once you come back to the party, it means you start afresh according to Article 10. And because of that, that is why people are raising all the roofs and trying to raise all the noise that they can raise in the world. That, you know, in fact, if it starts now, counting to 2026, when the convention is going to come, then it would not have been 5 years. By then, it would have been something like 3 years or so.
Lasana Dumbuya is the Secretary General of the All People's Congress. He spoke with me from the Sierra Leonean capital, Freetown. And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
continue. Just let me so.
It's so sorry, oh good. I don't want for member.
Tell me soon it's time, cause I really want for know.
I lost me daddy by the rebel wars. Rebel attack the village. I in their home. No one for kill me, go me daddy tower. He say no. Because it's tower, not before me, there be the torture. Waiting, I'll be taking so till the broken teeth. When them no say me daddy like me so much, now that's make their hearts run. Dengue and the gun now. They say, well, you kill you begin. Where daddy turn, watch me. What a run, I know be a boss cry for me loving papa. Your command, see you begin. We are seeing blood is splash, so God are nearly faint. I tell daddy, say kill me, if not, I no more go save your life. Daddy, look me in the eye, shake head and boss cry. Daddy, hold the gun in my hand, but so God in no fire. Daddy, say Sunita, I no get mine for kill you. Make her die with this pain, once no more your life go more. Kill me for me, they say, well, you baby papa. Oh, what a wicked people. I've not ever seen a life. Now this not my problem. Where they kill me up and down. Make your soul rest in peace.
My God said it been full, so later. Do you have gold in
heart? I know we'll get you kind of pain.
What now you may say? I make you so.
Papa, oh, I know go get you kind of gay.
This is Jay Banks music.
And if it been on me heart, it goes off your story. Have faith on it, and believe in the mighty God. But what do you go want for to now? When you live in tomorrow?
I want for me education, college could be the best for me. I want for make sure for fulfill me daddy dream. Daddy not there today, oh, daddy spirit there with me.
I don't get much on it, but I'm gonna try for help you. And sit on choose for planning.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, and from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Douglas Impuga and engineer the affable Tiang Wen. We say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, when your grandmother tells you something, you don't run to your mother to find out if it's true. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa. Good evening, Africa.